and welcome to this edition of Inside Out with me, Susan Medaris. Another supposed scandal has put the Obama administration's credibility into question. This time, the IRS's monitoring of Tea Party and other conservative-led nonprofit groups. There are a lot of questions left unanswered. For example, was the IRS playing as the partisan wing of the Obama administration during the 2012 presidential elections when it started monitoring these groups? And who are these groups? And what is the role of black money? A lot to talk about. All that and more on this edition of Inside Out. Stay tuned. When the CVFC, a conservative veterans group in California, applied for tax-exempt status with the Internal Revenue Service, its biggest expenditure that year was several thousand dollars in radio ads backing a Republican candidate for Congress. Another conservative party, the Wetumpka Tea Party from Alabama, sponsored training for a Get Out the Vote initiative dedicated to the defeat of President Barack Obama, while the IRS was weighing its application. And the head of the Ohio Liberty Coalition, whose application languished with the IRS for more than 2 years, sent out emails to members about Mitt Romney campaign events and organized members to distribute Mr. Romney's presidential campaign literature. Representatives of these organizations have cried foul in recent weeks about their treatment by the IRS, saying they were among dozens of conservative groups unfairly targeted by the agency, harassed with inappropriate questionnaires and put off for months or years as the agency delayed decisions on their application. But a close examination of these groups and others reveals an array of election activities that tax experts and former IRS officials say would provide a legitimate basis for flagging them for closer review. The IRS was reviewing about 300 tax-exempt groups that may have been engaged in improper campaign activity. The problem with all of this is it happened during the 2012 U.S. presidential elections, when President Obama was running against Republican candidate Mitt Romney. I headed to meet up with my first guest, Professor of Economics at Hunter College, Howard Chernick, to talk more about the issue.
The IRS basic mission, of course, is to implement the rules for the tax for taxation and to collect revenue in an efficient and way that minimizes the disruption in the economy. But they have a lot of ancillary assignments, and the scandal is related to their assignment to assess whether organizations fit the tax exempt status, and the rules. The rules on what is tax exempt are used to be clearer, but now they're more and more ambiguous. And the particular section that has been where they used code or used key words like Tea Party and Patriot were for the 501c4 entities, which are defined in the code as social welfare groups, and to get the tax-exempt status, which means that any monies they earn, they don't have to pay taxes on that as a profit-making organization. The rules are that they have to be primarily social welfare, not primarily political, influencing a particular candidate. Well, the rules are very ambiguous.
A report issued this month by the Treasury Department's Inspector General J. Russell George found that inappropriate criteria, including a group's policy positions, were used to flag some cases, and that specialists in the IRS office in Cincinnati, which reviews all tax exemption requests, sometimes asked questions that were irrelevant to the application process. Agency officials have acknowledged that specialists inappropriately used keywords like Tea Party and Patriots in searching through applications. However, IRS agents are obligated to determine whether a 501c4 group is primarily promoting social welfare, as my guest noted earlier. While such groups are permitted some election involvement, they cannot be an organization's primary activity. That judgment does not hinge strictly on the proportion of funds a group spends on campaign ads, but on a mix of facts and circumstances. Chernik notes that one of the reasons the rules are so murky when it comes to these social welfare charity organizations is thanks to a 2010 Citizens United ruling on the Supreme Court that allows the moneyed elite to buy as much political power as they want without disclosing who's doing the buying. Citizens United allows nonprofit social welfare charities, which do not have to name their donors, spend money in elections as long as the primary purpose of their charity is not political.
The IRS tends to be underfunded, and the reason for that is that it's been a policy position, kind of a mantra of the conservatives to really vitiate the IRS. It's viewed as, since it's the agent that collects the hated taxes that make the hated government run, that's kind of the trench warfare of how you go at it. So this is a backwater sub-agency within the IRS, and they were flooded with applications for this new or expanded 5014C. It used to be mainly things like a firefighters benevolent association, which does not have a political purpose very much. And then with the Supreme Court ruling on Citizens United, it opened the floodgates for a whole host of new entities that are really primarily political in function, but that try to fit under this umbrella of the 5014C. And the insidious thing about it is that the advantage of the 5014C status is that the sources of revenue, the donors, can remain anonymous. And the suspicion is, and I think there's substantial evidence, is that there's a small number of very, very wealthy people who are funding most of these entities. There are hundreds and hundreds of entities, but most of them are funded by dark pools of money. And so this whole situation is a kind of a corruption of democracy, a way to channel unlimited funds into the political process with no transparency at all.
While my guest tells me that the manner these audits were done was a management mistake on the part of the IRS, he also says that the Republican Party is using the issue to deviate real conversation about key policy topics.
The point is to make sound and fury and distract the conversation from any policies. We saw a weakening Tea Party movement, a radical movement that had a brief flowering of influence, and then, according to the polls at least, a very significant attenuation of support and influence, and some see it as a way to revivify them.
The acting commissioner of the IRS resigned, and the agency apologized to the Tea Party. President Barack Obama has tried to keep his distance from the controversy. However, the Republicans are up in arms.
1 week ago tomorrow, we found out devastating information again, that the IRS apparently used for political purposes information about people's beliefs, whether they were religious beliefs or political beliefs, potentially to deny people their tax status if they tended to have beliefs that were against this administration.
The power of that government and to use it to stifle opposition is profoundly un-American. Someone needs to be held responsible, someone needs to be imprisoned, someone needs to be prosecuted. The resignation is a step in the right direction, but we need to find out who wrote this policy, who approved this policy, and they need to be held accountable.
President Obama campaigned on the slogan of change, saying that he'll bring renewed respect to civil liberties. Many now believe that his pre-election campaign promises are at odds with the current situation, notably the recent scandals. From the Department of Justice's wiretapping into AP phone records to the recent IRS scandal targeting conservative and Tea Party groups. My next guest looks at our topic of discussion from an interesting perspective. Sarah Flounders is an author and political writer, and is the principal leader of the International Action Center, an activist group founded by former United States Attorney General Ramsey Clark. It supports anti-imperialist movements around the world and opposes U.S. military intervention in all circumstances. My guest tells me that even though President Obama has asked to be measured by competence in his commitment to what he calls foundational American values, these are precisely two areas where he has not met the standards he set. I asked her what she thinks about the different controversies the administration is battling, not just the IRS scandal we're talking about today, but the behavior in the Benghazi scandal and intimidating whistleblowers, and the AP and Rosen scandal hounding individual journalists and news agencies. Has crushing opposition become the hallmark of the Obama presidency?
Well, this is a continuation of the policies of the last administration, the Republican Bush administration. It's really not much different. It is part of the whole repressive, growing repressive apparatus within the U.S. today, where at every level of government, the state, the federal, and the local, repression is growing on a vast scale. And what's happening, here you have Republicans in the Senate talking about what happened in Benghazi, but you know they're not saying a word about the real crime that was committed in Libya, the absolute destruction of every city in Libya, the destruction of the water, of the electric grid. They're not saying anything about what the people of Libya face today. So there's a lot of hypocrisy in blaming Obama for a policy that they were very happy with as long as it was cost-free, and it was a theft of the oil resources of Libya, of the contracts, of the almost $100 billion that Libya was holding in funds. They were very happy with that kind of theft and crime against the people of Libya.
White House officials say that Obama is committed to improving his record on civil liberties and that he will speak soon about how he intends to make his counterterrorism policy more transparent and consistent with the rule of law. His failure to do so has disappointed the left wing of his party in particular, which expected more after a 2008 campaign that was framed in part as a response to the ideologically charged years of President George W. Bush. The Iraq invasion and violent aftermath undermined the Bush administration for exposing flaws in its ability to plan and wage war, something it prided itself after the attacks of September 11, 2001. Obama is in a similar political dilemma in attempting to fulfill his pledge to expand civil liberties at home and a national security policy, an expected strength of his administration. Flounder says that it doesn't even matter who is in charge. The government is inherently corrupt and dysfunctional, and the long-term solution is for the American people to demand that the government be less involved, less intrusive, and therefore less able to carry out these kind of abuses. She adds that the mainstream media has also played an important role in aiding this and previous administrations in their policies.
When you look at what happened also under the Bush administration, where the media went along with the complete lies justifying the U.S. war in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and assured us 24/7 that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. In other words, they were complicit in the very crimes, and so they weren't worried about their records being tapped into. So on the part of the corporate media in the U.S., they are used to being collaborators in the crimes and selling war.
We move on to the depth of prosecution of whistleblowers in recent years. However, Flounders says, when we talk about these issues, it's important to note that they all fall in the category of promising a change that never came about. She gives some examples.
I do think others will be more reluctant to step forward, and I think that so many did step forward because there was a hope and there was the expectation that things would be different with an Obama administration. And it really shows that regardless of who is president, that the policies and the power of the military and the repressive apparatus in the U.S., from the CIA to the FBI to police forces of every size that have grown and grown really over the past 20 and 30 years, but especially since 9/11, we can see it on every level. The U.S. today has by far the largest prison population in the world, more than 2.5 million people in prison. It's more than 7 million if you count those on probation, parole, house arrest, and so forth. It's such a huge portion of the population who are in prison. There's also a growth in the prison population that's under solitary confinement and under torturous conditions. And we can see what's happened at Guantanamo, where Obama promised that he would reverse the Bush administration and yet has not done that. And Guantanamo continues open to this day, even though by the U.S. government's own records, 92% of all those who were kidnapped and taken to Guantanamo, there's no evidence at all that they were part of any, quote, terrorist network, Al-Qaeda network, or whatever you have. And yet, you have people waiting now years for release, who have where there's no evidence at all.
In recent weeks, potential 2016 Republican presidential candidates have also gotten into the conversation, saying, quote, this president has grown in the size, the scope, the debt, and the power of the federal government to such irresponsible proportions, and that this is the inevitable result. So what role does President Obama have to play in all of this? Is his model of big government causing problems, as some media outlets and conservatives warn us about?
Well, again, it's true of every administration that they pay attention to wealth and power. And there's no attention paid where you have populations that have no power. Right here in New York City, in terms of black and Latino youth, 700,000 youth on stop and frisk in the past year. So we're talking about a huge level of repression where young people walking down the street are constantly at danger and at risk of arrests, of seizures, of police attacks. And yet that is not a national outrage by the very media that is talking about and by those who are screaming about increased repression. What it is some of these forces aren't used to being the ones targeted. And when it is those who are impoverished who fill the prisons today in the U.S., then there's no outcry. We have lawyers, for example, also held in prison to this day, like Lynn Stewart, for defending a client. Now, that was prosecution that began in the Bush administration, and the Obama administration has not released her, even though she's suffering from stage four cancer, and there's an entire movement nationally for her compassionate release. So I would say that the media, the corporate media, needs to really look at their responsibility in not reporting the crimes that are going on right in front of their face.
Going back to the IRS scandal, Anthony Romero, executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union, said, the IRS selective enforcement and the surveillance of reporters shows a willingness to compromise values in the Obama administration. He called the practices enormously troubling, and the tone is set at the top. He added, while not directly involved, the president bears responsibility for what his government officials can and should do. The ACLU executive director says that on issues where there are constituents and voters and powerful lobbying groups, President Obama has often done the right thing. But on issues like drones, Guantanamo, and surveillance where there is not an identifiable constituency, he often ends up on the wrong side of the value debate.
The scandal is that the Tea Party, the IRS, was looking at the tax returns of the Tea Party. Now, they did have a big infusion of corporate funds, of funds coming from the very richest, because the Tea Party was all about addressing the concerns of the wealthy. Now, when you look at what happened to the Occupy movement, there were completely legal, we have a constitutional right under freedom of assembly, so there were occupations across the country, the Occupy Wall Street movement. In more than 1,000 small cities and towns, there were Occupies, along with Occupy Wall Street right down at Zuccotti Park. And every single one of those gatherings, and it was coordinated by the Justice Department, but local police forces, regardless of who was in office, Republican or Democrat, on a local level, every single one of those occupations, the police swooped in the middle of the night, confiscated everything, arrested people, and simply closed down these legal sites where people were gathered for the right to petition, the right to raise grievances, something that we're told still exists in the Constitution. Now, the very media that is making such a fuss about Tea Party and monitoring their tax returns was very silent on the roll-up of the Occupy movement. So again, it's very biased in terms of where the coverage is, and much more attention being given. How dare the government even look at the rich and powerful? How dare they even examine the corporate media and their reporters? But when it's targeting the movements from below, such as the Occupy Wall Street movement, or when it's targeting youth just on the streets here, or when it's targeting workers on strike, or when it's targeting immigrants, you know, more than a million immigrants deported, simply parents who don't come home from work, their children left without a mother or a father because they've simply been grabbed at their workplace. That is also the kind of repression that's going on and that is increasing here in the U.S.
The IRS case, the subject of an Inspector General review, challenges not only Obama's pledge on values, but also the competence of his administration. Attorney General Eric Holder called for a criminal investigation of the allegations, although he is now himself in hot waters, because there is question on to what extent he was involved himself. At the end of the day, the IRS is independent of the White House, and President Obama is prohibited by post-Watergate legal restrictions from interfering with its activities. But he will be challenged on its operations all the same, and no doubt his legacy as a manager of the federal government will be colored by the facts as they unfold. Finally, I asked both of my guests this week how they think all of this will have an effect on the president's legacy.
Hopes were enormously high that a very different president would come in to office and have a very different policy. And it was significant that the first African-American president was elected. It was a big step forward in terms of the backwardness of white workers in the U.S. to make a step like that. That was of historic importance. But it shows again that regardless of who is in office, the Obama administration has done nothing to change the unemployment rates, nothing to change the money put into job training. Instead, the money went to bail out the banks and not individual homeowners, where millions of people lost their homes. So that has a lot to do with how Obama will be seen historically, and it's a reason for the growing disappointment and anger that's seething from below.
I actually think that the investigating of the reporters is the most troubling. That was really out of hand. It can't help them, but I guess I defer to the longer-term political analysts who say, without no pun intended, that it's a bit of a tempest in a teapot, and that people have, and what they express in polls and in their concerns, is that the economy shows some semblance of recovery, that the country not engage in frivolous wars. I think those issues will be at the forefront. Right. I think this will energize, I guess, energize a small group, re-energize a small group, but I don't ultimately think it will be terribly important.
At the end of the day, the IRS scandal involves large conservative groups. However, less affluent nonprofits have voiced concerns, saying that they've faced problems as well, from cases like the NDAA to crackdown on whistleblowers. Voicing opposition has become challenging, notably during Obama's second term. It's yet to be seen how the issue of civil liberties will play out in the Obama legacy. That's all the time we have for this edition of Inside Out. Thanks so much for staying with us and watching. Remember, you can always send me your emails to insideout@susanmadaris.com. I'm always looking forward to them. You can also follow me on Twitter for latest updates and discussions. Until next week and another show, goodbye.